Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
In the wake of the assassination attempt on Donald Trump, the number of rumours and theories surrounding the event exploded. Some said that it was an inside job on the left, others said that it was staged by the right to garner sympathy for the former president. Both versions, conspiracy theories, of course. But sometimes, in lieu of facts, after a big event has occurred, alternative versions of the story start to circulate. Misinformation fills the gaps, and sometimes it can even be hard to decipher fact from fiction. To discuss this, I'm joined now by Aoife Gallagher, senior analyst at the Institute of Strategic Dialogue and the author of Web of Lies. Good morning to Aoife. Thank you very much for joining us. I learned about the Trump's assassination attempt 45 minutes after it happened with a curated tweet on X that suggested, in what had been selected by them for me to read, that it was an inside job of some kind. I had to go elsewhere, obviously, for the facts. Within 45 minutes, the conspiracy theories were there and had been pushed out before the real events, or the real facts were being pushed out.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think that with a situation like that, like a huge breaking news event that grabs people's attention, as you say, there's a gap between the news breaking and some kind of facts being able to come out. I think a story like this is, it's quite interesting, right? Because it's kind of is a lesson in people's biases, right? And it was almost the same for me. When I saw that breaking news alert, I actually went to an RTE post on Instagram and went into the comments, and everyone was saying that it was staged. And I actually couldn't believe that, which is weird considering my job is to kind of look at bizarre conspiracy theories, but it was immediate. And I think that people's biases have a big role to play here. So as you said at the start, there's kind of two versions of the story. There's the, you know, Trump supporters that believe that this was orchestrated by Joe Biden along with the Secret Service, and they kind of let it happen or orchestrated it to happen. And then you have people that, you know, don't trust Trump, believe him to be a fraud and someone who will do kind of anything to get into power, who think that that it was staged. Do you know what I mean? And I think there's a distinction to be made here. I think it's very natural after a situation like this for people to speculate, right? And our brains will actually just naturally do it. We'll kind of fill in the blanks with whatever information we have. But what isn't natural or normal is our information environment. And as you said, when you went on to Twitter, X, a platform that used to be somewhat reliable in breaking news events for, you know, being able to find posts from journalists and kind of, you know, facts that were being pushed out, the platform has now kind of been twisted on its head, really, so that when you go onto the platform, the accounts that are paying Elon Musk that $8 a month to get boosted in the algorithm are the ones that are floating to the top of the feed. And that kind of content is content that, you know, generates engagement, that keeps people's eyes on their screens for as long as possible. It's not content that is based on fact. It's content that is based on emotion a lot of the time.
Have we any idea how much money there is in peddling this kind of nonsense and misinformation?
It's hard to put a number on it, right? But I mean, you know, and this goes back to the business model of a lot of social media platforms, is to say the business model is to keep people's eyes on their screens, to target them with advertising. And they use algorithms to do this. And the algorithms are built to boost content that generates engagement, not content that is accurate, that is truthful, content that triggers outrage or different kinds of emotions. And that is one of the fundamental issues that I think we're dealing with just generally. I think that when we're talking about, you know, the kind of state of social media and the cesspit of platforms like Twitter, it really is those algorithms that are the fundamental problem here, I think.
Okay. There's a difficult place for mainstream media in this conversation, because we tend to kind of pompously say, oh, well, people, of course, should be getting their information from us and not from social media accounts. But people don't trust us anymore in the same way. Have you any insight into what it is that we have done wrong?
I think it's part of a wider phenomenon. And it's part of a wider phenomenon that is aiming to manipulate people's trust in things like the media or, you know, state institutions, institutions that over, you know, in the past would have been reliable and people would have trusted in them. There's a number of reasons for that. I mean, the media is not perfect and the media makes mistakes and the media is open to sensationalism and bias and different editorial decisions that could be really, really problematic.
All of which can be said of social media as well.
Absolutely, yes. But, I mean, the distinction to be made between the media and social media is that there's checks and balances in the media. You have to make sure that you're not defaming people. You have to make sure that you're within the confines of the law in what you're saying. That is not present on social media, right? It's kind of like the Wild West. You can say what you want and there really isn't very many repercussions if you're going to go on social media and spread lies, do you know what I mean? And it's the platforms are failing in that regard to tackle these issues.
So are you saying that mainstream media is just boring in hanging around and waiting to establish the facts when within 45 minutes you should have come up with a reasonable theory that you have dreamt up in your mother's box room, bedroom by yourself?
Well, absolutely not. I mean, the media has to, you know, if there's one thing the media should do, it is stick to the facts and stick to what is actually known about an incident, I suppose. But as I say, the speculation among people kind of generally is absolutely natural. The thing that isn't natural is the way it's fed to people on social media.
And we might think that we're not susceptible to all of this. But again, another personal example, the late Jay Slater. Terribly tragic story. A guy goes missing on his holidays in Tenerife. And there was a huge swirl of different theories being offered here. And one of them that I read was that this was, and this is completely incorrect, as let me say now, but the suggestion was put out that this was a crowdfunding grift being launched by friends or family of his. No substantiation to that whatsoever. But that suggestion lodged itself in my brain for a while. And every time I saw the Jay Slater story again, that was one of the calculations that I was making.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's an interesting point that you bring up, right? Because I think a lot of people will not believe the conspiracy theories and are able to kind of see through it and go, well, that kind of seems like nonsense. But the thing is, if you're consuming it, it'll subconsciously go into your brain. Do you know what I mean? And as you say, every time you revisit that story, that's what you think about. I think that is something that we haven't really got to grips with yet, is the way that this kind of content is changing the way that we view like, you know, world events or things like a missing persons case or just, you know, anything like that there. I think that's, yeah.
For the most part, this confines itself to online activity. It could almost be seen as a kind of an entertainment or a pastime. But then you have, as we did, with the search for that missing woman who fell into a river in the north of England, these peculiar places where it jumps through the looking glass and crosses into real life.
Yeah, and again, this is another thing that social media has done, right? It has allowed people to become amateur detectives. So it's allowed people to kind of become a part of a story like that there. I think with the Jay Slater story, there was a Facebook group that was set up for people. And I think people maybe join Facebook groups like that there with the best intentions, but don't kind of realise that the constant speculation about what's happening is actually hampering efforts. In the case of Nicole Bully, there was, I think, at least one person who went to the scene of where she was missing and live streamed themselves on YouTube from the scene. They were eventually arrested. But this is the point, they're kind of doing it for social media kudos. You know, people like that there are doing it for that reason. They're, you know, they're not really doing it because they, well, maybe they are. Maybe a part of them is doing it because they want to help out as well. But again, you know, in both of those cases, the police had to come out and say that it was hampering their efforts. It was not helping. In the case of Jay Slater, I think they came out and said that the search was that they weren't searching anymore, but they actually had to search in private, essentially, because of the amount of speculation that was being driven by them.
By the time you had finished writing Web of Lies, did you come to any conclusions what you would do if you were made Elon Musk for a day?
Oh God, what a question. Oh my God, I don't even know if I know how to answer that, to be honest. I mean, the changes that we've seen in Twitter since Elon Musk took over, and that book was released, I think, the month after it was when Elon Musk took over Twitter.
So I don't mean to confine that question just to Twitter or X, but to all social media.
Yeah, I mean, again, it goes back to the algorithms. If I had a, you know, top of my wish list is something has to be done about the business model of social media. I think that when these discussions come out, a lot of it kind of goes back to people believe that, that people like me want to censor people and want to say, you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to say that in social media. And that's not the case. I think that you're never going to stop people from saying what they want online. It's the way that that information has been fed to people. That is the fundamental issue that is going on here. I think that when that is tackled, I think there will be ways to be able to make sure that fringe ideas are confined to the fringes and stay there.
Aoife Gallagher, thank you very much for coming into us today. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.